White Rocket Entertainment.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition. 2, 1, 0. We have a liftoff. We have a liftoff, and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center as the Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Hello and welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, along with people like you via Patreon.com. Well, I just got back from DragonCon 2017, and I recorded several panels there. Really cool stuff on a lot of topics. Here now is the Game of Thrones panel from the Fantasy Track at DragonCon 2017. My fellow panelists will introduce themselves as we begin, but I wanted to get this one up as soon as possible since the show just finished its 7th season just prior to DragonCon. If you enjoy this show, please consider helping out joining the White Rocket Entertainment family by going to Patreon.com, P-A-T-R-E-O-N.com, and becoming a member. For as little as a dollar a month, you can help us continue to produce shows like the one you are about to hear, and we really appreciate it. And as always, we thank Nicholas Cottrell, David Medinas, Mark Squire, Dave Powell, Jared Albrick, Rich Reimer, Michael Kirshner, Bill Matthews, Joey Miller, Matthew Wagstaff, Chris Thrash, Wes Atkinson, J.W. Rice, Phil Amthor, Randall Walker, Richard Stevens, and War Damn Wade, as well as our anonymous one-time contributors. All of you folks are enormously appreciated for what you do to help us stay on the air. So without further ado, here we go, the Game of Thrones panel at DragonCon 2017.
Welcome to the Game of Thrones Lookback panel. My name is Jimmy Liang, and I'll be your moderator for today. With us on our panel, we have Van Allen Plexico. We have, I'm just going to say Andrew.
Tedeschi, yeah.
Jennifer Liang.
Hi.
And we have Tara Lynn.
Guys.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to let them introduce themselves, and they're going to reflect on the latest season of Game of Thrones, and then after that we're going to do a audience participation. So you guys are going to choose the topic we're going to talk about. So if someone wants to talk about dragons, you can talk about the topic, and then we'll let our panelists reflect on said topic. Okay. So let's go ahead and let our moderators introduce themselves. Ben?
Me? Yeah, I'm Van Allen Plexico. I'm a professor of history and political science at Southwestern Illinois, and I'm a pulp science fiction superhero writer for several publishers, and I do some fantasy Roger Zelazny style stuff like the two I brought here that seemed appropriate for this panel.
Eat the mic.
Is the mic on?
Hello? Hello? A little better? Okay, so I write science fiction, fantasy, superheroes, all that. And I also host the White Rocket Podcast, so I'll record this discussion. We've been doing a lot of in-depth two-hour episodes per week coverage of Game of Thrones this past season, my partner and I. So I was really looking forward to getting to hearing some other perspectives from it. So,
hey, guys, I'm Andrew Tedeschi. I'm a lawyer from Orlando, Florida. More importantly, I am a super fan of Game of Thrones and Song of Ice and Fire. I've read all the books, all the prequel stuff, just got that great Dunkin' Egg graphic novel. I'm really super excited to read it. More importantly, I guess I've been doing Game of Thrones stuff for a while. I've attended Ice and Fire Con a couple years, which is a book-based convention that Tara actually organizes, and just love the series. I've spent way too much time on the wiki of Ice and Fire looking up all the random houses, so I'm excited to talk about Game of Thrones today.
Hey, I'm Jennifer Liang. I am the director of High Fantasy here at DragonCon, so this is my drag room. Thank you for coming. Previously, I ran the Wheel of Time track here at DragonCon, so I have a lot of experience with long-running series that eventually get finished. and I'm a big fan of the show and the books, and looking forward to talking about it.
Hi, so I am Tara, and I am an author and blogger and podcaster and webcaster. I do like 8 billion things, guys. Like Angie said, I founded and organized Ice and Fire Con. It was the first ever Song of Ice and Fire Game of Thrones convention in the Western Hemisphere, and we've been doing it for 5 years now, so we've got our 6th year next year. I'm really excited. Where is it? Ohio. It's about an hour outside of Columbus, Ohio. This year or next year. We've moved a couple times because we've grown a lot since our first year 5 years ago. So obviously I read the books and watch the show. I webcast about it, podcast about it. I write about it, and it's usually a lot of very snarky writing about Game of Thrones. So be prepared for snark.
Okay, so before we get started with the audience participation, give us your feedback of season 7.
It was awesome.
That's why you brought me down here, right? Is to say it was awesome. Thank you.
I don't see your point. I love it.
Yeah,
there's
a lot we can say, obviously, and we got an hour now, we're going to say it. But I think that given the constraints that the creators, the writers are working under, given the situation that they're basically doing fan fiction now and they're trying to just give us an ending that will be satisfactory, given that there is no map, they are off the map now, right? Given the fact that they have 13 episodes to do everything, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
All those factors, you know, we can certainly nitpick, and I'm sure we'll nitpick a good bit, but all those constraining, limiting, you know, affecting factors taken into account, I think they've done an outstanding job, and I'm really looking forward to next season, someday, whenever we get the last season.
Yeah, I think Van Allen said the right word there, fanfic. That's what I always use to describe it at this point. I said, you got to, you know, especially because I deal with a lot of passionate book readers that just get very fired up, and I say, you know, it's fanfic. Sometimes it's good fanfic. Sometimes it's bad fanfic. And we'll talk about that. I did an unofficial Facebook poll, and I just said, oh, my friends, send me what you think is the best, what you think is the worst. I mean, best was unanimously Dragons. You know, I think worst was Twincest, probably. And then in the middle was Littlefinger's Death, very controversial. So I'm sure we'll get to talk about all those things today.
There you go.
Before we get to the controversial part, I just want to remind everybody we are collecting charity for the Georgia Special Olympics. That's where the big orange jar is. And we are going to implement a swear jar. So if you say something that's not appropriate,
I got my pile of change ready.
Yeah, I get some change in the swear jar.
I'm just going to drop a down payment here. So, Ben Allen, if you want to toss that in for me, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
All right, you can say a bunch with that.
She's good for the rest of the
night. My opinion of the last season is that there's a lot of really great moments, but the show is no longer following its own narrative rules.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna admit this. I read the spoilers, like the leaks, the script leaks. So I knew, like, obviously we weren't sure if these were legitimate, but as silly as some of the stuff sounded, it was kind of like, okay. Yeah, Benioff and Weiss, they're probably going to do this. This sounds really stupid, but they're probably going to do it. So when, as the show was airing and I realized like one thing after another from the leaks was coming true, I was actually really happy that I'd read them, because I think I enjoyed this season more than I've enjoyed a season of the show since like maybe season 3, mostly because I had months to prepare myself for the nonsense. and there were some really great things that happened. Like, there were some amazing, you know, scenes, both just the quiet, you know, conversational scenes and the big action scenes. But like you said, they're not following their own narrative rules, and it's driving me crazy.
Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to do audience participation, and we're going to do it in sections. So the room is split into three, so we're going to start here. Who here has a topic that they want to discuss?
Can we talk about the Queen of Thrones? Maybe she wears some grease, because Elena going out like that was absolutely a baller.
Like a goddamn baller.
Yes, she was.
Yes.
So I want to get some thoughts. Yes. Unfortunately, that I haven't made it. We're happy to see her go, and it did kind of incite an argument between us. So, apparently there are some people that were happy to see her go. So,
I mean, listen, she had definitely served her purpose on the show. You know, so her, you know, dying was a long time coming. Kind of, honestly, there's a lot of characters that finally went away this season that their deaths were a long time coming. A little better. But yeah, it's sad to see her go. But yeah, I think that in terms of character, you know, deaths, even though we didn't see her death on screen, she got a really great last scene in there. You know, able to just tell Jamie what's what, and I'm trying so hard not to swear.
Do you want some of my change?
Terry, you just gotta realize she's the honey badger of Westeros. She just does not give a shit. Yeah.
He's prepaid. No, he's prepaid. He's
yeah, no, but Elena she was.
I haven't sworn yet. I haven't sworn yet.
But you're going to. You may as well.
There.
So yeah, Elena was a really great character, and I think her death just fit her character so well. Like, you know, she's kind of backed into a corner. There's no way out. Like, she's got nothing left. She's like, fine, give me the poison. What are we doing here? Like, don't waste my time with this. Like, I'm obviously going to die. Quit wasting my time. How's this going to happen? And then, oh, by the way, I killed everything you ever loved.
I just kept looking at her, and I know that she's playing the Queen of Thorns, and that's awesome, but I just kept, every time she'd have a scene, I'd be sitting there going, this is the only woman that ever married James Bond. And I was just in awe of that. That's so cool. It's the same woman. But
Mrs. Peele.
Yeah, she was that too. But, no, to look at her death and understand why it happened and when and everything, you have to understand that this season, and I'm sure next season of Game of Thrones, you reverse engineer what's happening, because the plot is becoming a spider web leading to a point, and that is that all the pieces on the board have to be put in the right places for the end game. And to get the pieces on the right place on the board, you have to at least somewhat plausibly justify why they are going there. And so you needed you needed Tyrion to be able to be in the room with Cersei. And the only way that Cersei and Tyrion could be in the room together is if Cersei knows that Tyrion didn't kill her son. So you had to have the Queen of Thorns tell Jaime that so he could tell Cersei that. Man, this is complicated.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? And so you can walk everything that happens back a few steps or forward a few steps and figure out exactly why it happened. And the thing I've been saying on the podcast is sometimes it borders on or crosses over contrived, right? They have to be very careful, because when you have such a little amount of time and space left to do these things, it starts crossing over into contrived, where you can see the puppet master at work. It works much better in the early seasons, where they could just meander along and things could happen randomly. When you're having to kind of, you're herding the cats toward the door now, and you can start to see the herding going on, is what I'm saying.
But, you know, and I totally agree. Every scene with Diana Rigg, I was transfixed. I mean, she did such an amazing job. But I think narratively, that's where it creates problems for me, because I think they've done this thing, which is, I think it's very ham-fisted, of just systematically wiping out entire regions. So we've got, you know, RIP Dorne. And then the whole Reach, you know, does the same thing of either falling into anarchy or automatically bending the knee as soon as, you know, certain people are killed, ignoring the fact that there's dozens of other noble families, you know, if you remember when they
Dorne hasn't made sense since they introduced it.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And despite the fact that when they introduced Dorne, they had Tyrion sitting outside saying the names of all the noble houses coming in. Mm-hmm. So all those guys just automatically, you know, are running around stabbing each other in anarchy and Dorne now, I guess. But you know,
they all disappeared very conveniently.
Yeah.
Exactly,
yeah.
And that's my problem with not Elena, love Elena, but just with what they've done with the Reach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there are there's other noble houses in the Reach. Like, we've seen the Tarleys, and they at least gave us a reason why the Tarleys were not with Elena. He prefers the queen that he knows rather than the crazy queen with the dragons. So they've given us that, but we know there's other houses in the Reach, and we're just not seeing it. And that's one of the things that I think is a consequence of the adaption and a consequence of them knowing they only have so many hours of TV left.
Correct.
To show this, is we were telling a very complicated story, and it was very realistic, and now we're like, you know what? It's about tits and dragons now, so we're just going to do that.
I mean, let's be real, there were not that many tits this season.
No,
the nudity factor
is one of the narrative rules that they've broken. When Little Finger has not given a monologue while a bunch of hookers fuck behind him.
And Code Word did not be able to ding-dong anymore. R.I.P.
I mean, we did get John Cena's butt, though, and as much as I don't really like that style, that butt, y'all.
It was a solid butt.
That is.
Okay, let's go to another topic here.
So the subject I'd like to go over is the Valadar. We had Neandra correcting for High Valyrian that a prince can also be a princess. So couldn't a little brother also be a little sister? And that being the case, hopefully I'm sure going to get Qui-Gon Bol next year.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Well, the problem was...
I think the Klingon Bowl was when they, like, glared at each other.
No, that was the way-in. That was the way-in. That was the way-in. We haven't had the fight yet.
Crab on my jeans here.
That was the way-in.
If a piece of chicken gets between them, then they'll be Klingon.
There you go.
But what I was thinking is that you could have that. He kills, obviously, the mountain. And...
what is dead can never die.
Well, he cuts off his head. That's certainly something he's...
It's an inconvenience.
That's certainly something he's capable of doing. Okay, and while he receives a mortal wound, and in the last moments he reaches out and he kills Cersei. He's the little brother of the mountain who protects her.
That's the problem. Everybody's a little brother now. All the older ones are dead. So everybody's a little brother, a little sister. Jaime, Tyrion, the Hound, Arya. Everybody's a little brother, a little sister. So there's like 8,000 suspects in this lineup.
Because the prophecy was, it didn't say your
the baby.
Little brother. It just said the
little brother.
So
that's right.
It could be anyone's little brother, anyone's little sister. So you could also have, when the Hound is killing the mountain, you could have Arya as him.
I still feel like the show is setting up Jaime to be the little brother, though.
It's too obvious.
There's like some little visual tricks they've been doing that make me think that in terms of visual language, they're trying to set this up. Like when they painted that giant map for no reason in the courtyard, I think the only reason they painted that map was so that Jaime could stand on the fingers while Cersei stood on the neck.
Yeah.
Like I think they did that just to set that visual thing up.
You have more faith in the people who write that show.
Pirates into it, and they don't need pirates.
Is anybody totally confused about the Valonqar prophecy? Does anybody not know about that?
Yeah.
You don't know about it? Okay, just a new introduction. So Cersei is apparently going to be murdered. She received a prophecy when she was very young that she would be murdered by this Valonqar. And that...
Not in the show!
Excuse me, in the books it was there. Also, was it in the history and lore? I forget now.
No, I think they referenced it in the show because it, like, one of the very few flashbacks they've done.
Yes, this is the problem we have now. So, you know, and...
It's two different things. I mean...
And they've also... But to be fair, they've also introduced stuff in history and lore that they've gone and contradicted in the shows. In those extra content on the DVDs, it's really great. You can go on YouTube and watch it. And it's all the extra sort of background in history. You get Blackfyre Rebellion, a bunch of history. But the Valyrian spelling is very tricky. I mean, we've gone back on the fact that this is a lost language. This is not an actively spoken language. The amount of Valyrian that's spoken in the Free Cities is bastard Valyrian. It's mixed. It's essentially like a Creole language. So there's potentially many pronunciation and translation issues. And on top of that, prophecy is tricky. Even Martin says that, is that prophecy is extremely tricky, and you can see it many ways. So yes, now I think the top contenders are probably the Hound or Jaime.
Or Arya if you
go with the sister. But any of those are plausible, I think, going forward.
And again, you have to reverse engineer. Why would they go out of their way to make the gender comment if it didn't matter? Because they are to the point now where writing these shows is like writing a short story where you don't put anything in there extraneous. Everything is there for a reason. And again, in this current season and next season, I'm sure, knock you over the head, you know, for a reason, in very obvious.
Oh, they knock you over the head in the previously on segment.
Oh God, yes.
Like seriously, here's Benjen. They're just like banging you on the head with Benjen.
Why would they show us that?
Nobody's seen Benjen in a while, but he's coming back in this episode. Don't forget.
How many times did that maester say the wall's never fallen?
Oh yeah.
And the wall came tumbling down.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's been the Chekhov's gun that they've had on the table since the.
Oh.
When the show started, we all knew the wall was coming down at some point. Like,
okay,
we just and it was a good time for it to come down narratively, because that gives us our cliffhanger to carry us into the next season.
It's a good time for the wall to come down narratively. Here's my question, though. What the heck was the Night King's plan before the dragon? Unless the Night King can see the future, right? Unless he can see into the future.
Well,
I'm just assuming he can't. He had no idea he was going to have this, you know, white dragon.
There's one theory. There's one theory that it was all the Night King's plan, that he lured John and company up there to bring the dragon. I know it doesn't make
any
sense at all, but what does, right?
That dumb.
Well, it's hard. You don't really lose betting on John being super smart.
Hey guys, before we continue on, there were four people who signed up for hearing disabilities. Are you in the room? I'm sorry.
She checked prior to her
arrival. No, 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 no.
She's
no.
Still here, and she's signed if there's anybody who needs her.
No? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I think we're on
fire, right?
We are.
Who's getting whacked next?
Not the Sopranos.
The plot.
George.
George.
I think that, I think it's, it's Game of Thrones, but they, this season, and this is, again, goes back to the fact that they're not following their own narrative rules. They're not following George's narrative rules. This used to be a show, and the book series is the same way, where anybody can die. You know, like, I remember when I read, you know, Game of Thrones forever and ever ago, reading that chapter where Ned dies, and I was like, no, this is fake. This is a joke, right? Oh,
when does he come back?
You know, so, but that's the thing, like, this season, in the sixth episode, where they literally brought in wildling red shirts. Like, when they left the wall at the end of episode five, it was just the named characters.
Yes.
And then at the beginning of the episode, there's, like, one random wildling.
Who are these
and as
people?
As the episode goes on, they just kept adding wildlings for the express purpose of having somebody who wasn't important to kill off. Yeah, sure, Thoros died in that episode. Like, Thoros is cool and all. Thoros is cool and all, but...
Yeah.
I mean, he was cool,
yes.
But...
He could bring him back to life. Again, reverse engineer,
and
you need the guy that can't bring
him. It had been Tormund, because I'm very invested in him and Brienne.
Ship that.
Been very sad if he didn't get a chance to hook up with Bran.
But I mean, like, you know, like Tara said, you knew that that suicide squad they sent out was pretty much going to come back. I mean, all those folks, I mean, Gendry is now heir to the Stormlands, by the way, guys, you know, because who's left?
Surprise.
Yeah. But you felt that each of those characters had more plot, had more development. I mean, you knew the Hound had to come back for Clegane Bowl, you know, so you knew things were going to happen. I was a bit worried about Tormund for that one second,
yeah.
But I'm like, no, they have more development. And by the way, who do they have left for Wildlings? Who do they have left to represent that entire culture? I mean, now that, you know, Ygritte's dead, and that's
mm-hmm.
pretty much it.
That's it.
They're just...
Yeah, oh, yeah, Gilly. Sam. Oh, sorry, Gilly. Yeah,
although Gilly is not quite a wildling. Kind of...
She's a classy lady.
She's a super classy lady.
She can't pronounce Rhaegar, but other than that...
Rocker.
Craster's elementary school wasn't very good.
Yeah, it's not accredited.
So,
it's not an accredited institution.
A tail and a bit of writing. So they answer your question about the how officers and I can get across... You would have to wait because that narrow sea would have gotten frozen. So you have to walk around the walls, right? But my question is so now that Bran is the Lord of Raven, right, and he's a warg. Thank you. Sorry, I always open your mouth up. So now that he's a warg, that could be an indication of how he could, right? Because he, you know, he can go back in time and just whisper to the, you know, the king and.
Mm-hmm.
Built the wall, and now he's like, okay, well, I can't stop it, so now I have to walk and warg into the dragon. So what are you guys' thoughts about that?
So do you want to introduce the basis for the Bran as a Night's King theory?
Yes. Oh, he's not the Night King.
But just to introduce the theory, right? So this is a very popular theory. Maybe people have heard it, maybe people have not heard it. But it's established that Bran's a warg. and also he's a three-eyed raven. So he can not only control animals, but also people, as seen with Hodor, right? And he can also transition time. He actually affected Hodor temporally in the past with a present action. Therefore, at one point, it is foreseen that he might have gone back and influenced several historical events, such as Ares the Mad King might have heard voices and therefore heard, you know, muttered, burn them all, they've shown that in the show, and also gone back and influenced other things, perhaps building the wall, and perhaps in a time of dire need, he might try to go back and stop the Night's King. But the theory is that he goes back and stop and gets into the body of the Night's King and gets stuck there. Because they've kind of said if you stay too long, you can get stuck there. You know, don't stay. Don't, you know, stay in the vision for too long. The Three-Eyed Raven kept pulling him out before and keeping him from going so far back. So the theory is he goes back, he gets stuck in the body and transformed into the Night King. And he's stuck there. His present body could be killed, I guess, if, let's say, the White Walkers overrun Winterfell or whatever. But once you're, if you're at war, you're stuck in that body. They haven't introduced that concept too much in the show, but they have in the books,
yeah.
where there's characters that die. And
they haven't really done a whole lot with the warging.
Yeah,
no, not lately.
But that's the basis of the theory.
I mean, to be real, like I don't actually think that Bran is the Night King. But at the same time, like I know that you mentioned that they could have just like waited, and I know that. I know eventually he would have gotten, you know, past the wall. It's just kind of, you know, funny that that was the big end of the season is, you know, them getting past the wall with the dragon that they didn't know they were gonna have.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they were hoping to find like that magical horn that's only in the book.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I always thought it was more likely that Bran goes back in time and is Bran the Builder. Like
yeah.
he goes back in time and tells them, you really need to build a wall.
Yeah.
Giant wall.
And has the same name. Right? It seems a little more plausible because he has the same name.
I'm really interested in finding out, besides the Bran theory, I'm pretty convinced the Night King is a Targaryen. What do you think about that?
Well, you can ride a dragon.
I think that, here's the thing. If we're going by the show, y'all sure, anything's possible, because D&D just kind of do whatever they want. Whether or not
they're really just following the rule of cool when it comes to narrative right now.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, in general, like, from the books, no, I don't think that's possible because the Night King was like a person that existed before the Targaryens even, like,
yeah.
were...
So
even before the, yeah, before
yeah.
the Targaryens ever ruled Westeros, possibly even before the Targaryens had Dragonstone, because they're, you know, the Targs were on Dragonstone for quite a while before they conquered Westeros.
Mm-hmm.
So this, like, he may even be, like, I'm pretty sure he's pre-Doom of Valyria.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. But again, like, I don't know, like, when it comes to theories, I don't know about anybody else, but I'm pretty open-minded. I will listen to just about any theory. Doesn't, you know, it's not to say I believe it, but, you know, like Preston Jacobs, like, his videos are super entertaining. His theories are nuts for the most part. But then, like, if you don't open yourself up to, you know, that sort of, like, narrative discussion, you miss out on a lot of stuff. So, like, yeah, I don't think the Night's King could be a Targaryen, but I would like to see somebody kind of research that and tell me why or why not it could be possible.
And I think we saw, like, the flashbacks from Bran where they saw the creation of the White Walkers. Like, that would have been the Children of the Forest. That would be pre-Andal invasion of Westeros. So that's definitely way before the Targaryens were even even before Valyria was a thing. So that was, we're talking, like, thousands and thousands of years ago. So, like, timeline-wise, it just doesn't match up for him to be a Targaryen.
And in the supplementary material, like World of Ice and Fire, they have
mm-hmm.
well-documented when the Targaryen queen went north on her dragon and gave extra land to the Night's Watch.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually do... The one good thing about that book is if you want a Targaryen history...
Yeah.
The World of Ice and Fire book is a really good resource to kind of get the Targaryen history, and that's pretty well documented.
Hello. Okay, so my topic is Cersei's pregnancy.
Her fake pregnancy.
That's one of my points. Is she really pregnant, or is it just a ploy to get Jaime to do what she wants him to do? And if she is pregnant, is it Jamie's or could it possibly be Euron Greyjoy's? Is it, did I say that right?
Yeah.
I don't see any way that she and Euron Greyjoy were anywhere. They weren't together, right? I mean, they were.
Yeah,
they negotiated.
I mean, he's trying to get with her.
Right.
I don't think it's worked yet.
No.
She is definitely not picking up what he's laying down.
Yeah.
that leather jacket, though. Come on.
Oh, I mean, he does shop at the Hot Topic, so. but yeah, like I am not quite sold that she's actually pregnant. I think it's very within her capabilities to fake a pregnancy to get Jamie to do what she wants. And
well, how much time has passed, though? That's the question. One of the big problems with the show is that some things take weeks and weeks, other things take minutes, and it seems to go parallel. And so it's hard to tell how much time had passed between when she told Jamie she was pregnant and when we saw her at the summit meeting, right? I mean, if it had been much time at all, shouldn't we have been able to tell? I mean, has she got the Red Keep's tailors working overtime on letting out her
fancy
dresses?
I will say that if she is faking a pregnancy, she has an enormous commitment to it because she's pretty much an alcoholic. Like, she drinks a lot. And she has quit drinking even in front of Tyrion. So either she's really committed to this method.
But was that a subtle? She was wanting him to know so she could draw him in to fall for her trick.
Yeah, and they've made show Cersei is actually as smart as she thinks she is.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
Much different than book Cersei.
Yeah, very different. So she is capable of pulling off this kind of ruse.
Yeah,
but also, I mean, she was pretty convincing in her scene with Jamie, saying, you know, okay, in the scene where I was really thinking, okay, it's possible she could kill Jamie here. It might happen, you know, at this point.
No, absolutely.
I mean, this is YOLO Cersei who just blew up the Septa Baelor with a wildfire. So, you know, moving from, you know, season one where it's all subtlety and behind the scenes and, you know.
I think she couldn't have killed Jamie and let Tyrion live. I think that she was like, I want to kill you, and it galls me to let two people walk away from me.
Right.
But in the end of the day, I'll have killed Jamie and not Tyrion, and that just can't happen. So if I didn't kill Tyrion, Jamie could do anything, and she'd be like, no, I'm not going to kill him. Right?
And I think that adds to the power of it being a real pregnancy for me personally.
Yeah.
You know, and who knows if that's going to carry to term. You know, she's got a lot of stress. You know, she's, you know, might pick up the bottle again. Who knows? So.
Yeah. But I will give Cersei credit for actually thinking about succession plans. That's one of my big criticisms of Daenerys wanting her enthroned. She believes she's infertile. So why are we trying to found a new dynasty of Targaryens? What is your long-term plan? Like, one of the key functions of a medieval ruler is to ensure the succession. You have to have babies, and you have to have a lot of babies, and you have to have them very quickly, and you have to raise them to be adults. And Daenerys believes that she is not capable of doing that. So why is she planning to take the throne? Like, is it just for her own personal aggrandizement, or, like, there's no long-term plan for her other than, I'm going to conquer Westeros.
Break the wheel.
Although I will say, like, as much as I did not like, you know, and I agree, like, as I was a history major, and the line of succession thing is so, so important, and the fact that she's just ignoring it is obnoxious. But, and also, I was like, I don't even like Tyrion. I know, don't hate me. I don't really like Tyrion, but, like, when she was, like, snipping at him, you know, for kind of saying, like, hey, like, you say you can't have kids, you really should be thinking about this, that was really frustrating. But actually, like, and I don't really know if this was a legitimate, you know, writing choice on their part or if it just sort of worked this way. But to me, it's kind of like, if you are a woman who can't have kids, that's if you want to have kids, whether it's for the succession thing or whether because you just want children, it's really frustrating and upsetting. And like, it's a very, very difficult thing to realize, like, I want to have children and I can't. So, like, looking back at it, I was able to respect her conversation with Tyrion more because, you know, yes, I guess it could just be that she's like, yeah, I just want to rule and we'll worry about the kid thing later. But also, if she doesn't want to, you know, she doesn't want to face that fact right now, she doesn't want to face the fact that she can't have kids. It's a rough thing to face. So yeah, of course she's going to be kind of snippy with, you know, Tyrion for bringing it up at, like, this, you know, bad time.
I want to address Dany's issues. You made a good point about what is she doing this for? Is it just self-aggrandizement? I think it's the opposite. I think that Dany is trying to conquer Westeros because she sees how horrible it's being managed by everybody else, and she thinks that she's the one person, given her lineage, given her what she's been through, given the dragons, given all these things, she's the one person that, as she says, can break the wheel. And I think she just kind of wants to leave it a better place than she finds it, and then after that it's kind of up to Westeros to carry on and not screw it back up again, which is a big...
One of the things that the show is somewhat consistent with the books on is Daenerys is a bad ruler. She is bad at her job. Like, she's great at conquering things. She's great at freeing slaves. She's great at disrupting things. But she is not good at building things. And I think the books do a better job of demonstrating this. But, like, Marina's a shit show, guys. Like, there's no way there's anybody left alive in Essos after what she did to them. Like, she's conquered all these cities. She's left crazy people in charge of them. She left her ex-boyfriend, who was a mercenary soldier, and not really good at anything other than hard fucking.
And, you know, he's coming back next season. You know, he's on that ship with Euro Greyjoy, and they're having a party and doing shots, and they're coming back with that golden company.
There's no way that there's anybody left alive in Essos because she's, like, just destroyed everything, and now she's like, and now I'm coming home.
the references to the golden company that Cersei has made, you know, I literally almost just said Enron Greyjoy. I've been calling him Enron all season because I read an article where somebody like spelled the name Enron. And, like, their editor did not catch it. And it was, like, a big website, too. So I've been calling him Enron all season. It's, like, impossible to call him here.
Which is funny, since he's absolutely not the smartest guy in the room.
Yes.
So the Golden Company is coming over with Euron. And, I mean, Daenerys, again, the prophecy thing in the show with Daenerys is especially, it's, like, nowhere near as important as it is in the books. And it's also nowhere near as important as it is with Cersei in the show, apparently. But, you know, they did have that time, you know, seasons and seasons ago where she's going to be betrayed once for gold, once for love, and once for, what was the other one?
I can't remember, but yeah.
Gold, love, and something.
Death? Something.
But whatever. So Dargo, like, he was really pissed that he got left behind by her. He's apparently super in love with Daenerys, and he's mad he got left behind. And, like, I just can't imagine them, if they're going out of their way to bring a sellsword company over from Essos, I have to imagine that Dario is going to be, if not the leader of Golden Company now, then at least part of it, which, like, you know...
Yeah, like, nothing else, just for the conservation of characters, because why would they want to cast a new actor and bring in some other person that we have to get invested in? They're not going to bring in... the character from the books that runs the Golden Company is John Connington.
Right.
They're not going to bring in that guy at all. His super elaborate backstory. There's just no purpose to it in the show as it's written right now.
The purpose to bring over the Golden Company, as they mentioned in the show, is elephants. We're going to get zombie elephants now.
Oh, sweet.
I mean, it's going to be some
sick
battles.
Forget what I said. This is going to be awesome.
Which, once again, is the top item. You know, when it goes back to setting up the coolest battles. I mean, I think it's the lowest common denominator, once again, you know, tits and battles. So.
Well, but we wouldn't have thought they were going to bring the Iron Islands people back either. So, you know, I mean, or the Dorne people when they came in. I mean, they just keep bringing stuff in at the last minute, so it's
not... Gendry.
I'm sorry, what
was the purpose of bringing Gendry?
Gendry,
yeah.
He's been rolling for like six seasons now. He's so fit, you know?
They even made a joke about that. Like, this
now
is clearly... They're really writing fanfic at that point when they're doing that.
I think Gendry is really a unit of speed, you know, like, how fast can he run,
Well, he can clearly outrun, like, a dragon, so...
Well, yeah, he's faster than a raven, apparently.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, we've been using a Gendry as a unit of speed and... since that episode, so if you're like that raven, the raven that flew from Eastwatch to Dragonstone,
1,000 miles.
Yeah, that traveled at the speed of 10 Gendrys.
Got another question over here.
Right, so I'm not happy about it. I'm okay if they shrink, you know, the map of Westeros to 1/3 the size it should be, if Jon Snow teleports 1,000 miles in a single scene, a dragon flies 300 miles an hour because the plot requires it. You know, that sort of thing is disappointing, but I understand we have to cut out the scenes of traveling that we used to love so much. But the one thing I find hard to accept and don't like at all is bad writing, bad characterization, which I felt this whole the Winterfell plot.
Oh my god.
Was so horrible. Sansa was badly characterized. Arya was butchered. Littlefinger skulking around with really nothing to do.
Awkwardly
so,
hiding his muscle hair.
Varys did nothing this whole season. Varys is supposed to be like helping Dany out and being the mastermind. He did nothing except sit around this season. And the whole let's fetch an ice zombie to show Cersei, who, by the way, already has a zombie serving as her bodyguard, to prove that such things exist. That whole plot line was just, you know, smack your head, stupid.
And yet it
so
worked for a
that?
Moment. And yet we thought that it worked, right? When Cersei freaks out and you say, well, she's pregnant and this zombie's coming right at her because they had it attached by a chain to the hound. I mean,
they're still writing Cersei consistently, and I appreciate that because Cersei will always look out for number one, will always be like, okay, how can I use this situation to screw as many people as possible?
I think
we
can count on one hand the characters that they're writing consistently. The only one I can think of right now is Cersei.
Yeah.
Maybe Daenerys, bend the knee.
Yeah.
Hashtag bend the knee. The Winterfell thing, I will say, and this was a really bad, I think, editing decision on their part. There is a scene that was filmed where Sansa goes to Bran and asks for his help, and they decide to cut it. So it does exist. I'm sure it'll be on the, you know, Blu-ray or whatever. But when they cut that scene, it was literally to create really shitty tension, quote unquote. Like that's what I really believe that's what they thought they were doing. That they were. You know, people are getting freaked out. Arya and Sansa hate each other. What is going on? Is this going to end the family? Personally, like I said, I did read the leaks. So I, like, you know, from the leaks, it was basically that whole situation was spelled out. Not so much that Sansa and Arya were faking it, but that, you know, they band together and you know, kill Littlefinger. But, it was a really, I think... I get why they did it, not just for time constraints, but also because they wanted to have that extra, you know, sort of, oh, what's going on?
But it's also basically just having those two characters kill time while everybody else fucks around with dragons.
Yeah, yeah. So. And Sansa was just, she is one of my, like, favorite characters from the books. I can't even tell you, like, in the show, I like Tormund. But, like... In the books, you know, my three favorite characters from the books, two of them, Sandor is fine in the show, but, like, Jaime and Sansa are my other two book characters that are my favorites, and they're both written so, like, inconsistently. Jaime's bad. He's consistent, but he's really badly written.
Yeah.
Sansa is completely inconsistent, and that's why the writing for her is so bad on the show. I talk a lot of shit about the timeline stuff, but mostly I'm joking about it because I get it. This is a TV show. They have to cut things out. They can't include everything. I understand this. I mean, I watch Walking Dead is the same way. Like, I know they can't do the things in the show that they do in the comics, and they can't do the things in the show that they do in the books in this case. But when it's not just the timeline that's suffering, when it's the characters, it's really frustrating because they can do better. Remember the first couple seasons? In the season two, maybe not so much. But, like, the first season, holy crap, like, what happened to that writing? Mm-hmm. You know, what happened to that writing?
The issue I had with Arya and Sansa and Littlefinger at the end was that you were really left with really two bad options there. On the one hand, Littlefinger has been so dumb that these two girls have played him, and I didn't buy that. Or Sansa is so dumb that she's turning against Arya for no reason, and I didn't buy that. So when you finally find out what actually does happen, I'm like, well, at least it's the good thing that I don't buy rather than the bad thing that I don't buy. So there was that at least.
Okay. I think that both Sansa and Arya were being stupid. They were both turning on each other. It wasn't just Sansa being dumb, you know, Sansa being dumb turning on Arya. Arya was being a bitch. She's being a little bitch.
She's the one who showed up with a suitcase full of faces.
Yeah.
Why are we talking about how Sansa's the bad person?
So did everything that changed in their relationship happen after Sansa found the faces, well, because it wasn't clear.
It wasn't clear if that was part of the operation, or if everything changed
off camera after that scene.
But that scene when she walks in and talks about the game of faces, I've read a pretty good analysis of that, saying she, it was really her playing a game where they both lie because they know Littlefinger's listening.
Okay.
So they're actually intentionally lying and treating each other that way because they know that they need to trick Littlefinger.
So when Sansa did earlier, apparently, find the faces, yeah, since she would have known about them in the scene where she acted like she didn't, what was her reaction then? Because we don't know, right? It happened off camera. That's we don't know.
It is weird when your sister has a suitcase full of faces.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe Arya actually had, like, shown, like, after if the thing with Sansa and Bran, I don't know the exact timeline of when that scene was supposed to have been in the show.
Right.
But assuming that happened before the scene where Sansa finds the faces, I feel like if that had already happened and Sansa and Arya had already had a talk, Arya might have just shown her what was going on.
Right.
But also, like, when it comes to Littlefinger, like, he, in the show, he has not ever been as well, he's not ever been as
rounded,
you know, well-rounded as he is in the books. Like, the whole, have we forgotten? Chaos is a matter.
With arms fucking behind you.
Yeah, like Littlefinger in the show has been so just kind of, I mean, he's not like Bran, he's not like Danny Rand, Iron Fist, Three-Eyed Raven level, but like, he basically tells everybody what he's doing all the time, you know, he's not quite Bran's level, but he's up there, you know, he's not as smart in the show, not as smartly written in the show as he is in the books.
And then we're ignoring characters like Robin, where's Robin? Okay, we're just gonna, you know, we've got what we want out of him, which is a giant army of knights for our battle scene. We're done with Robin now.
I mean, they did bring Bronzy and Royce back to say that one line,
yeah,
for an entire episode.
I think not. That was good.
So this is gonna be our last topic before we give our moderator, our panelists, a chance to close out this discussion.
It was a little throwaway moment in that last episode, but do you think there was anything significant in that when the zombie was tearing after Cersei, right, clearly going after her, that the mountain didn't step in to protect her?
Professional courtesy.
Yeah, I don't think that it was necessarily on purpose, but I guess the thing was chained up. I don't know if Sandor was, like, messing around or what. Like, if he was, kudos to him. Sense of humor.
But also, like, I've noticed that, the giant guy, doesn't seem to have a whole lot of initiative on his own. Like, he usually waits for Cersei to tell him what to do. There's a couple of times when he does, like, step between her and something, but it's more consistent that he's waiting for a direction, though.
I go to the lowest common denominator. I think it just generated the coolest scene, and I think that's what Dave and Dan were looking for.
Yeah.
Because then you get the John, here's how you kill a white, you know? I mean, so that I think, was what they really wanted to get to.
Well,
it gave us
a little bit of action, and also, like, it gave Qyburn his, like, I felt like there should have been, like, a soft romantic song.
Yes.
Yeah, also, trying to awkwardly hide a boner during that.
Yeah, he had a full erection.
You say you only hear what you want to hear. I would have really liked that one, you guys.
They did. Ooh, a different model.
This one with racing stripes.
Do you have time?
Okay, I think we do have one more topic before we get close out.
Okay.
I believe it's that section's turn.
Oh, yeah. The guy in the back of the room.
Is there any significance in the last scene with Tyrion, when Jon Snow goes into Daenerys' room?
He's awkwardly hiding a boner. Is there any significance in the scene where Jon goes into Daenerys' room on the ship and Tyrion's kind of like glaring? Yeah, both sex. Where Tyrion's like glaring at Byron. I'm pretty sure there was an interview done where Peter Dinklage said that it was him being concerned about, like, just the general idea of, like, if they get involved in each other or with each other, that that is going to screw other things, like it politically.
Yeah, it's a political, not a personal thing.
Yeah.
She needs to be thinking, I need to marry for an alliance. And like, the King of the North is probably a good alliance, but is there a better one? Like, you know, don't take the first dude. Like, shop around a little bit.
But they're both, and they're both prone to rash actions. So this can just give a justification for future rash actions. You know, dragons.
Could have like a
places.
Whole line of like rashly behaving idiot children that inherit the kingdom, and this is.
Like,
it's not going to go
with
well.
The Battle of the Bastards and Rickon, you know, it's like Sansa pretty much told you this was going to happen, and yet you're charging in the middle of the battle as the commander.
Yep.
But yeah, no, I mean, it does. I think that it is open to interpretation because he did look like it was a jealousy thing. But and if I hadn't read an article that where Peter Dinklage said like, no, it's just. He's just unsure about this situation because there's other more important things they need to deal with than incest.
Yeah, I think that Tyrion was kind of the stand-in for like not the audience specifically, but just anybody who's concerned that everything works out right. If they had just shown the sex, the end, it would have been like happy ending. But when you see I don't have any money, sorry. But when you see Tyrion out there going, then it's just basically signaling this could be problematic down the road.
We already know it's problematic because, you know, obviously there were the not even hints. It's been obvious for a while that Jon Snow is, you know, the son of Lyanna and Rhaegar. So we know that he is Dany's nephew. And have known for a while, but nobody else really has. But then, like, they didn't
except
just...
Except Bran, because he does every creepy thing about you.
They didn't just do a previously
on. He likes to watch.
They didn't just kind of, like, hint at it. It was literally the scene before they slept together where we got to see, you know, Rhaegar and Lyanna getting married for some reason by the Seven. I don't know why.
Yeah, whatever.
Whatever, YOLO.
We saw them getting married, and you know, and then there was, of course, the whole thing between Sam and Bran where it's like, oh my gosh, we have to tell him, and then they're having sex. Like, super, 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 like, obvious in that respect, and I don't know...
And Dany's pregnant, right? Because they did ham-fistedly say, I can't have a child, I can't have a child.
Oh, yeah,
child.
Yeah, yeah.
She's super pregnant, right?
Like, she's over, yeah.
We're having
okay.
a baby in the first episode.
We're on the same page.
Yeah.
Okay.
Lost dragon.
Yeah, three heads, right? Yeah.
She's going to, like,
right.
for life, and be like,
heads.
John, it's yours.
Yeah. I'm like little Sam, who took, like, 3 seasons to grow from being, like, an infant to, like, 2 years old.
No, this
while
baby's
everybody
going to
else is, like,
yeah.
years have passed,
yeah.
Dany's going to come back next season and have a mother, yes.
Yeah.
They have beautiful
Oh yes.
Someone worked out the DNA because the Targaryens have this habit of incest. Someone worked out like the level of how much DNA they share with each other. I can't remember what it is with Jon and Daenerys, but between Daenerys and Rhaegar, it was 88%, and siblings are typically 50%.
It was 47.75.
Thank you. 43.75.
We're gonna
43.75
or something like that.
No, they're
going to
have beautiful babies.
Oh, they're beautiful
babies with extra thighs. So, in closing, we know that season 7 ended with a collective no, because we have to wait for another season to start.
A long time.
Let's go down the table and what should we expect for season 8?
A whole lot crammed into a very short time, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we've heard it's going to be like an hour and a half every episode, which begs the question, why not just do more than 6 episodes and spread it out a little bit more? I don't know, but I mean, I guess
I think it's a production thing.
The story beats, too, maybe work out better on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that you're talking about seeing the puppeteer pulling the strings, you're going to see a lot of strings in the next season. Again, it's going to be okay if we're all happy with the ending. The thing to me, though, this is an entire story based around the idea of unhappy endings, right? Everything is kind of... every time you think you're coming up to a good thing, something bad happens. And so That's why I wonder if we'll ever get the last book, is because I don't know if George knows how to write a happy ending to a thing that's been universally down. Because it's television, and this is not, when we're talking about a television series, HBO and the producer and everything, when they're making up fan fiction, they're going to want it to be a satisfying happy ending for the TV audience. They're not concerned about the book readers getting their downer ending. So.
And George has said for the books, he considers and really appreciated the bittersweet ending. Like, for example, he likes the scourging of the shower.
Yeah.
Yeah, he likes that, how you have to go back home and clean that up. I mean, imagine the North covered in whites and you had to go back and clean that up. It's pretty sad.
Well, they're all going to starve to death because no one's farmed anything.
Exactly. But in terms of low-hanging fruit that we know we're going to see next season, I mean, we got a Theon rescue mission. For a second, I thought he was going to get in a fight with Euron. I thought that was a bad costume. Then I realized it's random sea captain number two. So we know that's going to happen. Cersei's got to die. Golden Company's going to show up. Clegane Bowl. So you got some highlights. Should be pretty sexy.
Yeah, I think we're going to see more dragons flying around. I think we're going to see a big dragon fight. The ice dragon has to fight the real dragons, and that's going to be badass, and it's going to be awesome. And I think that's going to take up all the writing and production budget for the entire season.
We're never getting Dire
Wolves again. Everything else will just be like, oh!
Hanging in Winterfell.
I want a post-credit scene after the whole thing is over and they run the credits and they do like a Marvel-style post-credit scene where everybody's gone and then Ghost comes walking out like...
there's obvious things that are going to happen. Like, the Theon rescue scene. We know Cersei is not going to live out the series. I'm sure there are plenty of other characters who aren't. Here's what I want. I want Tormund and Brienne to live happily ever after.
Ship it!
I want Sansa and Sandor to run into each other again, even if it's just for, like, a conversation. Like, I need some sand in my life. Other than that, I think... it's kind of anything goes. At this point, one of my bigger complaints with the season, this past season was, and really the past couple seasons, was Jaime and his absolute, lack of character development. What is going on with this dude? What happened to the Jaime I knew and loved from the books? He's just still obsessed with Cersei, but he's gone from her now. So I am also really interested to see, where his narrative takes him. And hopefully it will be something that is way better than everything they've done with him for the past couple of years.
You know what that shows? This is when plot takes over for character. Mm-hmm. They've become chess pieces, and so it's more about moving them in the right place than it is about developing them as human beings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the yep. But Tormund plus
Brienne
for everybody.
So if you guys love this Game of Thrones discussion, we do have another one tonight. It's Loony Theories, so any topic is open.
And both show and books.
No topic is taboo. So give it up for Van, Andrew, Jennifer, and Mark.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.